and welcome to Diary of a Common Man. My name is Salim Lalani, and thank you for joining me one more time. This week, we will talk about how did a Shia Imam become a Hindu god and a god of Islam. But before we do that, I wish to thank all my viewers for beautiful comments. Thank you. There were some negative comments as well, which are as valuable as the good comments because they help me learn and they help me engage. And most importantly, they help me prepare for my upcoming episode on childhood indoctrination. Before we actually begin the episode number 4, I wish to take you back to Iran, where Hassan bin Sabbah captured the fort of Almut. I could have spoken about the legend of assassins in the last episode, but a viewer has pointed out that it may be important to talk about it at this stage. So we'll talk about the legend of assassin. We learned earlier that Nizaris attracted many enemies due to their heretic outlook within Islam. When Hassan bin Sabbah captured the fortress of Almut, he made the Sultan of Iran, Malik Shah, his personal enemy. After all, Sultan owned that fort. Sultan invaded Almut but failed to drive Hassan bin Sabbah out. Although Hassan survived Sultan's aggression, but he knew it was only a matter of time before his community, his settlement would be unsettled. He had to have some kind of a strategy, a survival strategy, and he soon created one. What was that strategy? How was he going to subdue Sultan, who had a mighty empire and a very large military firepower? So how was Hassan, who was hiding in the fort of Almut with a few followers, how was he going to beat or defeat such a mighty emperor? But Hassan would go down in history as the most creative, one of the most intelligent people, and by far way ahead of his time. He soon gathered that it was not possible for him to engage in physical confrontation. So he adopted a strategy whereby he would spread fear, he would spread terror, in the hope that Sultan would leave him alone. He would send young men disguised as dervishes or saints to assassinate Sultan's officials in public places. But how was he proposing to convince his young men to go on a suicide mission? How was a young man going to go to a vegetable market, drive a dagger through someone's heart, and expect to remain alive? It was suicide mission and nothing else. How was he going to convince his men to die for him? Legend has it that Hassan built a replica of the promised paradise at Almut. Paradise, the way it is described in the holy book, complete with rivers of milk, fruit trees, gardens, and 72 virgins. As if that was not good enough, Hassan drugged these young men with hashish, that is opium. Once these men were on cloud nine, they were told that this was just a sample of what the real paradise would be if they were to die for the cause of Nizarism. These men are called fidais. In fact, fidai is a person who is willing to die for someone or something. So in this picture, Hassan orders one of his fidais to jump off a cliff to his death. The chosen fidais were trained in combat, disguises, and psychological strategies. Terraplot got off the ground with the assassination of the highest ranking official of the Sultan's court, Nizamul Mulk. Public execution of the right-hand man of the Sultan himself sent a wave of terror throughout Iran. Encouraged by early success, Hassan planned many more assassinations over time. Soon, Abbasids, Ayyubids, Fatimids, Seljuks, and even Christian princes fell to Fidai's daggers. There was fear and terror in the air. Nizaris came to be known by a chilling nickname, the Order of Assassins. Hassan had now left no doubt in the minds of his adversaries that Nizaris may be few in numbers but were capable of defending themselves with cold ruthlessness and suicidal determination. The word assassin that we use today originated from these Fidais. Because they were under the influence of opium, that is hashish, when killing people in the public, they were referred to as hashishins. Hashishins, which the Westerners pronounced as assassins. Marco Polo, the famous Venetian traveler in the 13th century, traveled through Iran and heard of the legend of assassins and the order of assassins, and he reported this in his work, Travels of Marco Polo. Whether his reports had any substance or not, no one knows, but it is widely accepted that the dreaded assassins were Nizari Ismailis. These Fidais, these Nizari Fidais, are a part of current Aga Khan's system. In fact, they meet every quarter. The meeting is called Fidai Majlis, and it is important to note, it is very important to note that harming anyone physically is the last thing on their mind. Let us now return to our agenda, which is how did Shia Imam convert into the divine? The Hindu story begins not in India but in Cairo, 11th century. We learned earlier that Nizaris were forced underground upon the death of Imam Nizar. Yes, they were underground, but their mission was not. Based on what transpired since, we can safely infer that they had been working on propagation strategies, because we saw Hassan bin Sabbah establish a Nizari settlement in Almut. During the same period, one more missionary, Sayyid Nur Muhammad Shah, departed Cairo looking for greener pastures. His destination? India. But why India? A Hindu country. Wouldn't it be easier to spread Nizarism to Muslims? Okay, there could have been at least two reasons for this. Firstly, the Islamic world was thirsting for Nizari blood, as we discussed earlier. Besides, India could potentially provide the dying Nizari movement a source of revenue. After all, India in medieval times was a golden goose, not only because it was rich, but because Hindus had deep pockets for God, particularly when he is on earth in human form. Sayyid Nur Muhammad Shah landed in the west coast of India in a little town called Patan in the state of Gujarat. He adopted the name Pir Sadgur Nur, which means true spiritual teacher. They say he studied Hindu mythology, local customs, music, dance, belief systems, value systems, social structure, etc. And based on this knowledge, he composed the Ginans. Ginans literally mean knowledge, but from Aga Khani terminology point of view, it means devotional song. A Ginanic tradition was born. It would be this tradition that would transform the Shia Imam into God's Islamic and Hindu. And it is no wonder that Aga Khan calls it a wonderful tradition. Gitans cover a diverse range of topics dealing with one's life. But my viewer will soon learn that the core purpose was to convert Hindus to Nizari faith by convincing them that Nizari Imam was none other than the awaited incarnation of Hindu god Vishnu. But how on earth did Nizari Peers bring together two conflicting, two opposing ideologies, Islam and Hinduism? This is how they brought it together. In Hindu mythology, there are many gods. Vishnu is one of them. Hindus believe Vishnu has descended upon earth in 9 different forms or avatars since the beginning of time. And the 9 avatars are Matsya, which is a fish, Kurma, which is a tortoise, Varaha, which is a boar, Narsimha, a creature that is half man, half lion, Vaman, a boy, Parshuram, a warrior, Lord Rama, Lord Krishna, and Lord Buddha. These are the 9 incarnations of Vishnu so far, and the 10th and the final avatara is eagerly awaited by Hindus. They believe Vishnu will appear one last time to eliminate vice forever. He will assume the name of Kalki, the destroyer of evil. Now, this is how the Nizari Peers fused Islam with Hinduism. Peer Shams Sabzwari, the 13th century Nizari Peer, first introduced the idea that Kalki Avatar had already arrived and his name was Imam Ali and his descendants lived in Iran. He began work on the concept and converted a few Hindus to Nizarism. But his apprentice, Peer Sadardin, composed a Ginan called Das Avatara, 10 incarnations of Vishnu. It is in this Ginan that the Peer explicitly presents Shia Imam Ali and hence Aga Khan as the incarnation of Vishnu. And following is the extract of this Ginan. It reads, Shri Dashmahe Shri Dashmahe Naklanki Rupe Lidoche Avatar Shri Shah Maulana Murtaza Ali Rupe Nam Bhanavyaji Allahji Maulaji. The gist of which is Maula Ali, the first Shia Imam, is the awaited 10th Avatara. Entire work can be downloaded from the below link. The next Ginan is an amazing piece of work. Hindus believe that Vishnu is actually a part of a trinity, just like Christian trinity where there is a God, Son of God and the Holy Ghost. Hindu trinity is made up of Brahma, the creator of this cosmos, Vishnu, the preserver and Mahesh, the destroyer. In this Ginan, this amazing Ginan, Peer suggests that Hindu trinity of Brahma, Mahesh, Vishnu lives within the person of Imam Ali. Not only that, in the same Ginan, apart from Hindu trinity, Imam Ali is also the Allah, God of Islam. And the Ginan goes as such. Eji Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshar, Bhanayaji, Kal Mahe Vishnu Imam Je Jeev Farmane Chalya So Pochya Behesht Makan Ilahi Bhet Tantamna. Meaning, know the Brahma, Mahesh and Vishnu. In the present age, Lord Vishnu is the Imam. Those souls that have followed the Farmans have reached the abode of paradise. Eji Al Ali Islam Shah Raja Allah Yehi Imam Peer Bhane Sadardin Kahet Kabirdin Moman Ku Behesht Makan Ilahi Behtantam. King Islam Shah, the 29th Imam, who is the progeny of Ali, is the king. Allah is indeed the Imam. This is taught by Pir Sadruddin and confirmed by Pir Hasan Kabiruddin. Now, Islam says there can be no God besides God. Hindus says anything and everything is God. And Nizaris say Aga Khan is both. It was no wonder that a few followers of Aga Khan had a massive problem with this back in 1970. There were rumblings of dissent in the community. Matter reached Sir Ibu Peerboy, Aga Khan's right-hand man in those days. When Sir Ibu failed to put out the fire, he referred the matter to Aga Khan himself, who convened a conference of all Ismaili leadership, the global Ismaili leadership, in Paris in 1975, and it came to be known as the Paris Conference. And the purpose of the Paris Conference was to basically provide a clarification in relation to Imam's divinity. When the leadership gathered in Paris, what do you think Aga Khan said he was? Would he say he's an Imam? Or would he say he was God? What do you think? He would say he is a Mazhar of God. The minutes of this conference can be downloaded from the below link. In the conference, Aga Khan says the Imam is to be explained as a Mazhar of God and the relationship between God and the Imam to be related to varying levels of inspiration and communication from God to man. If this clarification is clear to you, please let me know. By the way, the meaning of Mazhar is either copy or manifestation. Let us now summarize. In this episode, we traveled to India and witnessed the transformation of Nizari Imam into Hindu gods, Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh, and of course, God of Islam. We then met Aga Khan, the manifestation of God in Paris. It's now over to my viewers to work out the real identity of Aga Khan. Is he an Imam? Is he a descendant of the Prophet? Is he a Hindu god? Is he an Islamic god? Or what is he? Next week, we meet his grandfather, a genius and a very, very bright star in the Aga Khan history. It was he who revived the dying Nizari movement. Next week, we will watch him create this most mysterious, enigmatic, secretive, impregnable, ambiguous system. Until then, take care of yourself. Goodbye.